From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. It's been nearly 2 weeks since the Champlain Towers partially collapsed in Surfside, Florida, killing at least 28 people. More than 100 others remain missing. And on Sunday, crews demolished the remaining portion of the tower, worried about the approach of Tropical Storm Elsa. Around the country, the collapse of the condominium raised questions like, how could this happen? And could it happen where I live? We're joined now by Ann Cope. She's chief engineer with the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety, based in South Carolina. The Institute is an independent nonprofit organization that researches both residential and commercial home safety and how to better protect them against natural disasters. Ann, welcome to the 21st.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
I'd also like to welcome Daniel Smith. He's chief engineer with the Federal Alliance for Safe Homes, or FLASH. It's a nonprofit consumer advocate organization focused on safeguarding homes against natural and man-made disasters. Daniel, welcome to the 21st to you as well.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
And listeners, we want to hear from you. If you have a question for our structural engineers, join the conversation. 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us, as always, at 21st Show. So, Ann, I want to begin with you. With a collapse like the one we saw in Florida, a lot of people have been, maybe previously had thought, well, unless there was a natural disaster or terrorism or something like that, accidents like this don't typically happen in the United States. Were you surprised by what happened there?
You know, I was surprised, and thankfully, no, we don't see this type of tragic event in the United States often at all. I certainly can't recall an event like this one. And you know, first and foremost, our hearts go out to the families of everyone affected. This is a terrible loss of life, and families are still out there waiting and wondering and reeling in their grief. And I just wanted to send them our sympathies.
Absolutely. So, Daniel, what about you? Were you surprised by the collapse of the building down there?
I certainly was. Again, sympathies to all the families. And looking at the updates, it still looks like we won't know very much. And I know we're taking our time, and the storm obviously complicates things a bit. But I was very surprised. I know that there are some, and I'm sure we'll talk about that, some issues with building codes across the country, but on the whole, we have a legislated and regulated building environment. So a failure like this is quite surprising. Yes.
Yeah. Well, Daniel, let's talk about that. Are there national building codes or at least standards that builders are supposed to abide by?
We do have national building codes. We have the I codes, so the International Building Code and the International Residential Code, but in order for those to work, they have to be enforced. And so the enforcement is not, it's at the scale of the United States. It's not possible at a country level. And so that trickles down to state level for enforcement. And then going farther than that, it comes down to local level and county level. And so, the enforcement in order for those codes to work has to be kind of at each builder and each builder building inspection. And it takes everything along the whole chain in order for it to work. So the design has to be appropriate for the house and for where it's located and the hazards that it sees. The builder has to construct it right. The right materials have to be used. It has to be inspected properly. And so it really takes everything along the chain to make sure that a building is strong enough for the hazards that it sees.
So, Ann, I want to ask you, is there anything that we know so far about, was this a problem that goes back to the initial construction or a failure of maintenance of the building in Florida? Or what is the best thinking so far? And I know it's still early days in figuring out what
happened.
Well, sure.
And it is still early. And there are structural engineers across the country, and Daniel and myself included, who are going to be very eager to read the report when it comes out. NIST is on the ground there and doing a thorough investigation so that we can figure out exactly what all the contributing factors were. But, one thing that we do know for sure from seeing videos and pictures and memos and emails and letters is that the building was showing us that it was injured. And so one of the things I think that we as structural engineers can do and take from this as a learning point is, how do we communicate when buildings are damaged and in need of repair? How do we communicate the difference between, oh, that's a skinned knee and it needs, you know, some antibacterial stuff and a Band-Aid, and oh gosh, look, that is a broken leg, and it needs to be reset, and this is going to be intrusive, and that's going to be a big deal. How do we communicate about maintenance issues and damage issues for buildings in a way that is clear, so we're all talking the same language?
Yeah, no, that's a great point, especially when you have, you know, sometimes the politics of a condo board or something like that. There can be a lot of expense involved and maybe indecision about dealing with things like this. You know, Daniel, I want to ask you, 2 days after the building collapse in Florida, there was a much, much smaller scale building collapse in central Illinois in the town of Champaign. Nobody was injured. The space was not occupied, fortunately. It was a small brick building downtown. But it does make one wonder what sort of things businesses and even individual homeowners should be looking out for. In terms of, as Ann just said, you know, knowing when a building is telling us it is sick and in need of some health care.
Right. Yes, that's a great point. And it's really important that you brought that up, because I think that that's part of the solution to this problem is driving the appetite for this information and the need for us to take care of our buildings from the consumer perspective, instead of top down. Homeowners and building owners and those that are actually working and living in the buildings need to be looking at these items and asking, you know, the officials and those around them what their building looks like and what they can do to protect it. And so with Flash, we've developed a project to specifically look at that. It's called the Building Code Awareness Project, and we've developed a website. It's inspect2protect.org, and it's centered around providing consumers with the information that they need about the building codes in their area. So if you go to that website, you can type in your address, and if you know what year the building was built, you can actually look at the history of building code development in your area, and you can get a sense of what building code was in place when your building was constructed. And then you can also get some tips on retrofits or some of the items that have been changed about the building code over time that your older building might not have. And it also gives you a sense of whether or not your county or your local affiliate is enforcing the code. And it just gives you a little bit more transparency about what is going on in your local area. And that's really important.
All right, well, let me take a moment to remind listeners, you're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the broader implications of the building collapse that happened in Miami a couple of weeks ago. We're speaking with Daniel Smith. He's chief engineer with the Federal Alliance for Safe Homes, or FLASH. He was just talking about inspect2protect.org. We will tweet out that link if you're not in a position to make note of it now. We're also speaking with Ann Cope, who's chief engineer with the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. And Ann, I want to ask you, I think a lot of people, maybe when they have a home inspection, when they buy a house, right? And maybe they do the things the home inspector identified as problematic. Maybe they don't. Maybe they just, you know, sort of use it to negotiate the price down a little. And, you know, people get busy when they're moving. They don't end up following up on some of those things. What are recommendations for, I mean, should people be hiring home inspectors at, you know, times other than just when they're buying and selling houses and doing sort of more ongoing checking for things that might be going wrong in their residences?
Well, that's a great and interesting idea. You know, sure, we had a home inspection when we purchased the home that we're in now, and that was great information for us to have. And based on the results of that inspection, fortunately, the home was in good shape. And so now we only need to do small routine maintenance that people can take a look themselves. So one thing that a homeowner should absolutely do is just simply walk around and take a look. You know, does your roof look good? Are the gutters attached? Is there anything hanging off or sagging? Those are the types of things that you can just see, and you don't have to be an engineer to see those kind of things. And if you see something like that, that makes you then ask a deeper question, great. Please do get a professional out there to take a look for you. And we definitely encourage you to get that good inspection from a licensed inspector when you're selling the property or anytime that you're nervous or concerned. If something's creaking, settling, causing you to ask further questions, get that licensed professional out there to take a look for you.
You know, and Daniel, one of the things here in the Midwest that people are most concerned about are, you know, unlike just ongoing, you know, structural problems that develop over time, like happened in Miami, protecting against natural disasters like tornadoes, high winds, like we saw with the derecho a year or so ago here. What are some of the biggest things people can do to protect their homes against those sorts of specific natural disasters that affect places in the Midwest?
Well, so it's really important to make sure, and sometimes this can be really hard if you're not an engineer or you don't know what to look for, is making sure that you have the appropriate connections in your house. So it's a bit like the body. You have to have the wrist bone connected to the, you know, lower arm, which goes all the way up to the shoulder. And in order for the whole arm to work, everything has to be properly connected. And so, you know, when a tornado or even a hurricane comes to your house, it wants to pull the roof off or pull the building in different directions. And so if you don't have the right connections that are passing the load all the way down to the foundation from the roof, then you'll start to see some failures in the chain. And so it's really important to know that your house has the appropriate connections in it for wind loads. And the other thing would be to protect your windows. So if you're in a tornado prone area, some of the things that you could do, it's a bit hard with tornadoes, but we are getting better at having advanced warning. If you have a way to protect your windows or have impact resistant glass, which is a bit more common in hurricane prone areas, those are good ways to protect yourself.
Oh, like hurricane shutters, say a new sales opportunity in the Midwest, I guess. I don't know how you'd get them up fast enough sometimes, but okay. And I do want to ask you, turning back to Miami, one of the issues that I've heard discussed there is that back when this building went up, there was sort of a building boom, and some of the developers were kind of cowboys, right? Building quick and cheap, maybe building for, you know, and there are problems with concrete and we don't have to get into rebar and all that, but you know, building for a 50-year lifespan instead of a 100 or 200-year lifespan. There is a building boom in multi-story apartment buildings happening in Illinois and cities outside Chicago right now. Do these type of building booms raise safety concerns in your mind?
Well, you know, the boom itself means that there's a lot of activity, which you know, can be really great for those local areas. What I would point to is the presence and the administration and enforcement of codes. That's what you want to look for. And you know, Daniel provided the address there for the Inspector Protect website. If you go and look at Chicago, it's a patchwork. There are local jurisdictions that are adopting the most modern code and enforcing it. And then there are lots of jurisdictions that are not adopting modern codes or not adopting a code at all or not enforcing, not checking. So that to me, is the heart of the matter. We have the opportunity because we do have modern codes, but they're not going to help us if they stay on the shelf and they're not used. We have to be checking to make sure that buildings are going up in the right way. And that to me is the heart of the problem.
Daniel, we've only got about a minute remaining. I guess I want to ask, you know, hearing about, you know, looking to determine whether my house has the proper connections to withstand high winds, looking up building codes in my ear. This all sounds like a lot of work. I'm imagining some of our listeners are hearing this right now and thinking, oh my gosh, I don't know that I can deal with all that. I'd rather just not think about it and rely on hope. What is your best short pitch to people to try and, you know, do some of these steps that you've outlined today?
So my short pitch is inspect2protect.org. I know I already said that, but I promise you is all you have to do is go on and type in your address, and it is a very user-friendly website, and it'll give you a little bit more information. And I would just suggest that everyone start with that. You don't have to go out and do anything, but if you're educated, then you can start to think about a plan if you see issues. But really, it's just that tiny step that you need to do first, and everyone can go to a website and type in their address.
All right. Daniel Smith is chief engineer with the Federal Alliance for Safe Homes, or FLASH. We've also been speaking with Ann Cope, chief engineer with the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety, based in South Carolina. Daniel, Ann, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Listeners, stay with us. When we come back, we're going to be talking about legal movement in the case involving some coal ash ponds near the Vermilion River in East Central Illinois. And this has implications across the state, though, because there are these coal ash ponds everywhere across Illinois. We're going to be talking about that with some environmental activists coming up after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us.
Support for the 21st comes from Christie Clinic. Christie Clinic, providing health care to the community for more than 90 years. Local procedures, providers, specialties, and choice. Christie Clinic is focused on caring for the community.